Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
My name is Madison.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. This time, we're covering Seven from 1998, the David Fincher film. It's actually 1995.
95, man.
Why did I write that?
It would be funny if it was 1997.
You know what's funny about 1995, though? Is I was 7 years old when this movie came out.
I was...
Weird.
Negative three.
The numbers don't lie.
That was my...
I was born in 1987.
Whoa, there's sevens everywhere. Yeah. Well, the movie's about the seven deadly sins. It's called Seven, and it takes place over 7 days. And I just thought it was weird that I was 7 years old when it came out. That's all.
Wow.
But I said that on Letterboxd, and one of the first comments was in Kevin Hart's voice, damn. Because if you've seen that video where Don Cheadle says that he's almost 60 and Kevin Hart just goes, damn. And it's really a fit. So they were calling me old.
Oh,
whatever.
Funny.
Whatever, dude. This episode was requested by patron Pills, baby.
Pills, baby.
If you're a member of our Patreon at patreon.com/streamingthings, you get to, at a certain tier, demand that we cover a certain movie. And this patron picked Seven. The David Fincher classic. And so we're excited to dive into it. So what we'll do is we'll go around the room, talk about our overall thoughts, how we feel about the movie, our history with the film, and then go through a scene by scene, play by play, review and recap of the movie. That's how we're going to do it. I'll be honest. We tried to get you guys. We tried to slack off the last few weeks. Maybe we're not going to do full deep recaps for all the movies. This is what we thought, you know, but you guys called us on our bullshit. Like, look, that's what we listened to you for. And we tried, and that's just a corporate thing. Like how every now and then your chip bags will have less chips in them. Mm-hmm. You know, you rope a consumer in, and then you dial down the effort and charge the same price. That's all we were trying
capitism.
To do. It's capitism.
Capitism.
But no. You guys said nay. So that's what we're doing. From now on, you will always get the scene by scenes, the play by plays.
Speaking of slacking off, you may notice that my camera's not on.
That's the price. We'll do the recaps, but you're not getting all three cameras.
You're not getting all three cameras. No, if you listen to our last coverage, you realize that I am in the middle of revamping our studio, and currently our cameras, we can only get two cameras work at a time.
Yeah.
So Madison was off camera during Lost, and I thought it only fair that since she was specifically requested to be on this episode by Pills Baby, she should be on camera, and I will just hang out in the corner.
Just be an AI figure.
Yeah,
are you real?
My
we
hands
don't know.
Are. You definitely can't see all my hands in that photo. I could be AI.
You could be AI.
Got six hands.
Yeah,
I'm typing right now, prompting Steve's every word.
He's got feet that are hands. Mm-hmm. That's what you can't see in that photo. Mm-hmm. The piggies are hands.
Yeah,
it's hands
you wonder why
down.
He's not smiling because his teeth would look crazy
with all the hands in his mouth.
Yeah,
but we do have we have something special in this episode. We're gonna do our normal like recaps, scene by scene breakdowns. Tell you guys our overall thoughts on the movie. Maybe tell you some trivia. Maybe. that
maybe.
We have?
I don't
maybe.
Know.
Research. Maybe.
We also have a couple questions submitted to us from the Discord. Fun. About this specific movie.
Oh, really?
Just like asking us our thoughts about certain things.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I prompted them questions for everything we did this. We're recording today and we got some 7 questions.
Sick.
Wonderful.
We that's don't a- have 7 questions. We have questions about the movie 7.
Well,
that would have been better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start us off. Have both of you seen this movie prior to watching it for this?
I had, but it had only been once and it had been a while ago.
Steve?
No.
You had never seen 7.
I no. don't believe you.
Call him a liar.
Liar.
Interesting.
I've never seen the movie. However, the movie had been spoiled for me many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I think I just never was like, well, I know what happens. Mm. I know what's in the box.
Sure.
But so I never actually sat down and watched it before until now. And I'm glad that Pills Baby suggested we do because this was fun.
I'm very curious.
Well, this wasn't think. Fun. Sorry. I said this was fun.
This yeah. was fun. This was a romp. Fun little, you know, rom-com movie.
I'm really curious how this holds up in a sense of a person who's pretty significantly younger than me, but also a person who's never seen the movie before.
Significantly.
I think so. You know, like it's a generational thing.
Sure.
Slightly. I mean, I'm old enough for someone in the chat to go, damn.
Bam.
So I think who I assume was around your age.
It was me.
Damn.
Damn.
So, yeah, I'm really curious. So, Madison, let me know your thoughts. First time revisiting this movie. What'd you think? What is it giving?
It's giving no neck. It's giving headless. I loved watching this again. It's interesting, the first time that I watched this, so I want to say I was like a teenager, maybe 14, 15 when I first was exposed to this movie. And I think it was around the time that Netflix was starting. So I wouldn't say starting, but like having more blockbuster-esque movies. And I was like, oh, has Brad Pitt in it? I had seen the, you know, the cover before. I was like, oh, I'll just put it on. And I was kind of half paying attention at the time. I don't think I was old enough to really appreciate the movie and kind of the techniques used, and wasn't really familiar with David Fincher's work at this point. And so my first time watching it, I'm not gonna lie, I was not really paying a lot of attention. I obviously saw the end and, you know, saw that Kevin Spacey was the bad guy. And my initial reaction to that was, oh my God, this guy's creepy.
It's like that tracks.
Right. Yeah. But revisiting it again, kind of having, you know, going to school for film and being more familiar with David Fincher's work and kind of grasping what good writing is, I was blown away by how such good writing this movie has. And also the performances. And I looked up if this movie had received any Oscar attention, and it did, but only for editing. Like performance, there was no performance nominations or anything like that, which I thought was kind of shocking. But I loved revisiting this movie. It's a very dark movie.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah, it's visually dark. A lot of yellow.
Mm-hmm. A lot of rain.
A lot of rain. But it is a proper film noir, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. So
neo-noir.
Neo-noir, whatever. I loved it. I'm glad that that this one was chosen and I got to revisit it and pay more attention this time. And I thought the performances in it were really good, especially for like early, I want to say probably peak Brad Pitt, peak Gwyneth Paltrow. Morgan Freeman, obviously, at this point in his career is pretty.
Yeah, this is a pre-Gloop Gwyneth Paltrow.
Pre-Gloop.
Which Gloop? Is important to note.
Mm-hmm. Gloop?
You don't know about Gloop?
I don't know about Gloop.
Oh, boy.
Oh, cannot
but
wait.
I assume this is, because I know Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt dated, I assume this is around that time.
Yes.
Shortly before.
She's in the movie because David Fincher was like, hey, Brad Pitt, tell your girlfriend I really want her to be in this movie, and she keeps telling me no.
And then, yeah, because he starts dating Jennifer Aniston shortly after this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But no, I was very blown away by the writing and anything that kind of involves like any religious, like lore.
Mythology.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Yeah,
I know you didn't want to say it.
I love lore.
Yeah.
It's way better than data.
It it's just, it blows me away, like the detail that was given to this movie. And I can, I think I can rant on and on and on, but yeah, it was, I had a good time revisiting this movie.
Yeah, this movie is the first time I've ever seen it.
That's crazy. I still don't believe you.
Oh, it's Goop. I'm sorry.
Goop.
Oh, Goop.
I still don't know what you're talking about.
So
I'll look it up.
Gwyneth Paltrow is like the peak white woman, and she has like she's like the final boss, right? And she has a beauty line.
Oh. Which,
but she's like really out there and people laugh, right? Like they're there's candles scented like her vagina that you can buy, right? And you gave me a look like at Descartes, and I'm
me on our website right now.
Anyway, Steve, I'm so sorry to interrupt with the goopness.
No, I'm glad. Please, if you ever interrupt me, it better be for Goop.
So, you the first time you've ever seen Seven?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever seen it. I knew the plot. I knew the twist. I like knew the story.
Mm-hmm. You knew what was in the box.
I knew what was in the box. I knew what it was about. I knew Kevin Spacey was the bad guy, you know, all that stuff.
Sure.
And what I didn't, and I'm sure I knew this at some point, but like, because I've never seen the movie, I've never really interacted with it. I completely had forgotten that this is a David Fincher movie. Mm. And so when I booted it up and his name pops up in the credits, which is like pretty late in the movie because the movie kind of opens up nonchalantly with Morgan Freeman kind of getting ready. I was like, oh, this is a Fincher film. Oh, I bet this is going to lean really in hard on something. And boy, does it.
Yeah.
Because this movie is oppressively grimy, destitute, depressing, awful. Like in the setting, the movie's not awful, but like they're leaning into like this city is shit, and we're gonna remind you of it in every frame that this movie has to offer.
Yeah,
it's gross. Every wall has the paint falling off of it. Every ceiling has a water stain. And guess what? It's raining every day. I'm Casey Kasem. I don't know why we took that voice, but
yeah, you would go to Gotham to get a vacation from this city.
Exactly. Gotham, you know, at least has like cool gothic noir architecture. This is just like, the 70s never stopped in the griminess of the cities. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is like early 70s New York Times Square is the only thing that takes place here. So,
but the cool thing about this movie is it's this really depressing, grim look at like character development and what we are as a culture and society wrapped up in a police procedural. Like it lures you in as like, oh, we're going to solve a murder, right? Ah, you like watching those TV shows. You like a CSI. You like a Law and Order. Psych. We're meditating on how society is broken and we're all marching our way to hell. And that was, and I liked how it leaned into that. And even though I knew what the ending was and knew how it ended, by the time it got there, I really appreciated like, wow, this is so depressing and so dark. I kind of love it.
Really?
Yeah. I always respect movies that don't shy away from having an unhappy ending. And this is an unhappy ending. And Morgan Freeman, the whole time, like his whole character is like, well, I'm kind of give up on the world and I want to go on a farm or some shit, just not in this podunk town. And
I'm ready to get out of here.
You think, and like he has all these conversations with Brad Pitt.
Move somewhere with a library.
Andy Dufresne invited me to a beach in Sewatanew.
I'm polishing this guy's boat.
But you think, because he has these conversations with Brad Pitt the whole movie about like, hey, the world does suck, but Brad Pitt's like, but we still got to fight for what's right. And Morgan Freeman's like, it's a losing battle. I don't want to fight anymore. But you think that Morgan Freeman's going to have this character arcing, you know, journey where he's going to be like, you're right, son. Maybe I'll stay on the force and keep fighting crime. But no, even at the end, he's like, I'm still fucking retiring. That sucked.
Well, I don't know. I'm Stuttermaster Flex. I'm wondering if he does retire.
True.
At the end, he's like, where are you going to be? And he's like, around.
I'll be around.
Which
but he has
implied
that,
to me that he's not leaving.
But he still has this worldview of like,
yes,
he's still just going through
the
motions.
I told you everything sucked.
Yeah, he's still going through the motions of like, hey, we're not actually solving crime. We're just documenting the crime, basically, right? He has that conversation with him on the couch at one point.
Yeah.
And his last line is like, Ernest Hemingway once said, the world is a fine place worth fighting for. I believe in the second part. Mm. But it's like, that's kind of a bummer.
Also, like, Mills, I found a candle you might want to check out.
If you ever miss Tracy, just light this bad boy up. It'll be like your home.
Pay no mind to the hole in it.
And I apologize so fuck.
Oh, my God.
I apologize in advance for how often I will be dipping it. That's for you, but also for how much.
That's an impressive endeavor to, never mind. Never mind.
Yeah, I apologize for all the Morgan Freeman voices I will be slipping into throughout this whole podcast.
That's what they come
to
us
for, man. Nobody that's listening to this for at least the second time has any expectations beyond that. I love this film. This was one of those movies, which is why I was so surprised. Everybody's got different life experiences and stuff, but and where I come from, this was like an edgy DVD. Passed around. Mm-hmm. I mean, I probably watched it 20 or 30 times in high school. Like it was one of like the 20. There's like Lord of the Rings. And I say that for a lot of movies, but I think because of the age group, our patrons often pick from this pool that I was obsessed with, you know, 20 years ago, almost exclusively, which is why I say that so much. But Seven was definitely, I can remember the DVD like it was yesterday. Like it's got that, it was one of those like annoying kinds that has like the
little click hinge
on the side. And
those were annoying.
And like the fingers, the twisty fingers that we get, those were like when you pick the disc up that wasn't behind the plastic on the back. And I just remember it like it's yesterday. And I'd crack this baby in all the time. Cause I just, like you said, I love to like live in it. And I was kind of I wasn't a goth, but I liked that shit. Like I watched The Crow.
I wasn't a goth.
And Batman. And fucking, what's another one? Seven, but there's like another.
I mean, with Zodiac?
Sure. Zodiac's even. But
Sin
I wasn't.
City?
Like, smart people say Zodiac is David Fincher's best movie, but I'm not a huge fan, but I haven't seen it in over 10 years, and I would love to revisit it. Maybe I'm like one of those guys now. I've graduated.
I haven't seen a lot of David Fincher's movies. I have not seen Fight Club.
Whoa.
Which is surprising. I've not seen Zodiac. I have seen Social Network. Benjamin Button, and The Game. Which,
oh, shit, he did do Benjamin Button.
Yeah.
Wow, that is
Mank.
That's a departure.
Which, looking at kind of like just his, like the more, I would say the more notable movies, I mean, they're all kind of, you know, deep in terms of messaging and, you know, plot points and stuff like that. It's just.
David Fincher's definitely a.
Crazy.
Meticulously detailed craftsman who. Without a doubt, leans toward the dark, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's so fascinating watching early Fincher, which is what this is. Andrew Kevin Walker, by the way, just wrote his newest film, The Killer, which is on Netflix. It's not for everybody. I fucking love it because it's very self-referential. It's David
That's
Fincher.
That's the Fassbender movie.
Yes. Yeah. And it's Fincher laughing at himself a lot in that movie. But I adored it. But Andrew Kevin Walker reunited with him for that. And also there's a Nine Inch Nails song used at the beginning of this movie. And of course, Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails fame and Atticus Ross have gone on to be the composers for almost all of David Fincher's scores.
And they won an Oscar for Social Network?
I think they did, yeah.
Yeah.
Which Nine Inch Nails song?
It's had like a hole, I think. Mm. But it's in the opening credits. That's Nine Inch. I'm not crazy, right? Like it's a bastardized version of Head Like a Hole at the beginning.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Yeah. That's what I thought it was.
Black as your soul. Mm. It's not Animal or anything cool. That'd be weird. Just at the very beginning, like, I'm on a fucking night. What is this movie? And so I think he's just like a Nine Inch Nails fan is what I like to imagine. And that's amazing to me. I also did not know that Howard fucking Shore composed Seven. And then a few years after this went on to make the Lord of the Rings soundtrack.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Lord of the Rings.
That's
guy.
Some range, baby.
We love range.
But this is like a 5-star movie to me. Just there's a lot of nostalgia to it. I love the darkness of it. Even though as an adult, I have to be honest, I almost took some points off just because like it is so bleak.
It's very bleak.
Not just how it's shot and the colorization and the subject matter, but like its view of humanity is relentlessly bleak. And it leads you to believe that Morgan Somerset, Detective Somerset, is correct in his assessment that the world is shit and will always be shit. And I kind of hate that, right? Because I watched this right after I watched Knives Out.
But it's still worth fighting.
Which is the opposite. Like the character in that wins because they have human decency is their strongest attribute, right? Which is why I love that movie so much. So it's the opposite. And yet I still love it. And Mills is like incredibly homophobic, very product of the early, you know, mid 90s, which is something I never picked up on as a kid in the 90s or early aughts, you know. Yeah. But like there's a couple things where I was like, Jesus Christ, you know.
He's kind of a bastard.
Well, like when he drops the F slur, I was like, can't say that anymore. Wasn't a huge deal though, right? To me personally.
He drops the R slur later on. Sure, it's like, again, whoa, wait, can't say that
again,
either.
It's like, well, that's not cool anymore, but I get it. But then there's a point where he's in the restaurant and he's like, look, man, could you at least sit over there? So people, I'm like, this dude is like super scared to be gay. I feel like yeah. he is, yeah. you know?
So insecure.
That's why he's got two dogs and no kids. She's a beard. he's really sensitive about this.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to say about this movie that you're right, it is super, super bleak, but at the same time, it also has this restraint in ways where like if a movie came out now and some of the deaths that happen, they would like do like really like close up shots of like all the gross, grimy stuff happening or the act of. And they do a really good job of pulling back and just being like, no, we're not going to show you the guy killing the sex worker, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Sure. They just like, showed you the tool and let your mind do it. Yeah.
Yeah. They let your yeah. mind do it, which is way more effective. You see the aftermath of what happened. And in a way that's even more impactful, but also that does show a lot of restraint and kind of goes to this in a way. It kind of lends itself to the overall theme of like, we don't have to be gross and grimy to get our point across, which I appreciated. I thought that was great.
Because it kind of like to juxtapose that would be like a Saw movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's not, because I feel like those movies are to make you feel like the intentions of those are different than this. Like this yeah. is to like, this is eerie and like real deep human whatever. And then Saw is like just gore, straight
yeah.
gore.
Yeah. And I think you can show gore to a point where it's so over the top that your brain is able to abstract it. And it's mm-hmm. and it's paradoxically less affecting.
Yeah.
Whereas like this movie Seven fucks me up. Right. And I don't know how I watched it so much as a kid. Maybe that's what's wrong with me. But like last night, excuse me. There you go. I had like a pretty severe anxiety attack.
Get the bucket, Madison. Madison, get the bucket.
I had a pretty severe anxiety attack because of this movie. And I have other things going on. Right. But this is like the straw that broke the camel's back was. And it was like 12:30 at night and I'm finishing this movie and I'm like uncomfortable, you know? And it bled into this morning and then I broke Steve's glass and everything's just getting worse and worse and worse. But like this movie is just profoundly psychologically affecting. You know what I mean? It really is. And like that's to its credit, just be warned, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like you referenced watching this movie when you were younger and I watched it when I was younger too. I mean, granted, I wasn't paying attention too much, but you know, as an adult, you kind of look at the world in a different way. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, Seven does embody a lot of like, I mean, it's you're seeing the beginning of a marriage between two people, you know, starting a life together. Like for me, that's kind of how I resonated with those characters too, of like, oh, like they bought a house together. Like that's kind of on my mind. So like, there's definitely certain things that you relate to with these characters that almost kind of put you in that situation. So, I mean, I can understand being desensitized to it when you're younger because you don't really have an arm in the fight. Like, it's hard for a young person to relate to, like, these characters in that way. They're just seeing, like, the awfulness that is yeah. this murder and this person being crazy. But then as you're older and you're kind of looking at it from this lens of, like, oh, like, that's kind of me. Like, I do live in an apartment, you know. I do have weird quirks to my place and, you know, this idea of Gwyneth Paltrow being alone and not having somebody to talk to. Like that is something that, you know, it's kind of a nicher like story relation, but it's there. You know what I mean?
No, I think that's the heart of the story is ironically Tracy's character, specifically a scene between her and Somerset at a restaurant mm-hmm. that we'll get to, I think is like the emotional core of this movie that I definitely would have glossed over as a kid.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, you're right. I do look at things differently and I don't like the character of Mills, not just because he's homophobic in a very 90s way, but like,
very ignorant.
He's a douchebag.
Very ignorant.
Through and through. I don't even like to read or anything, which is just not my style. But also, like, it's so shitty that what he does to Tracy.
Yeah.
Out of his own career ambition. He moves her from a place where she's happy. Because mm-hmm. again, at the beginning of the movie, Somerset says, why are you even here? Like, I've never seen anybody request to be transferred like in the way that you did. And we never get the answer to that question. We just have to assume he's driven and you know, this is a place where a lot of crimes happen. A lot of homicides occur. So he can solve a lot of homicides maybe and like make his career. By the way, cops don't make that much. So he's like moved his wife, made her quit her job, moved her into a shithole where she has no friends. She's miserable. And then he's working 16-hour days, leaving her by herself for a job. It's not like they're getting wealthy off this or anything.
Yeah, and they have two dogs living in an apartment that they have a room of newspapers just for those dogs to hang out in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just feel like it's so, I cannot imagine, like, because I work a lot with the podcast and the videos and then my actual job. My wife's at home a lot or with friends a lot or not around me a lot, right? But it's like.
On purpose.
Yeah. You know, and I'm guilty about that, but it's like, at least I'm trying to build something for us. Whereas I feel like Detective Mills is just like all about his own career. You know what I'm saying? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Like I felt really bad. I pitied Tracy a lot. I never felt that way as a kid.
Yeah, and she kind of dives into it a little bit, like in the conversation with her in Somerset, where she's like, I don't want to be, I forget exactly what she says, but she's like, I don't want to be a burden.
I want to be supportive. Yeah.
Yeah, something along those lines. And I just am like, no, girly.
this town sucks.
But also, so like I said, it's been a minute since I've watched it, and I knew like each murder kind of embodied one of the seven deadly sins, and I thought that pride was going to be. I was just like loosely thinking about who's going to be what, and like trying to remember like which deadly sin is who, and I was like isn't Brad Pitt's character Mills, isn't he pride because of the whole like you know being pride and like taking. Pride and being where he's at and like stuff like that, but it wasn't, but just kind of showing
it could
like,
have been. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're all in every street corner, as John Doe says. But yeah, let's dive into it. So the movie opens with Somerset getting dressed, as Steve alluded to earlier. He goes to a crime scene. It's not related to the seven murders. It's just a crime scene. He asks, did the kids see it? And the other cop's like, fuck you.
What a weird, that was the first thing that the first inclination that something's wrong with this town, because Morgan Freeman asked, like, if he's a detective, that's legit, like, did the kids see it? Should we talk to them? Should we get clues? And the officer's like, oh, I fucking hate you, Somerset. I can't wait till you retire so I don't have to see your face. He's so mad.
I hope your pension gets lost in the mail.
And poor Somerset's
I'm glad
like,
your wife left you. I'll just say it. I'll be that guy.
I'll tell you what. I'm not a fan of that fella.
Can't wait till we get rid of you. And then Mills shows up. It's his first day in town. And that's when we have that conversation we were just talking about where Somerset's like, why'd you come here?
Well, I wasn't guarding the Taco Bell.
Yeah, I got spirits. And then he's got 7 days until he retires, right? So he's supposed to kind of be Mills's mentor, right? Lieutenant.
Don't you know if you're in the police force, you never say, like, I've got X amount of days till I retire.
It actually worked out for him in this case.
You know, it did. This is like a rare occurrence where it worked out for him.
And then he goes home. He plays a metronome, which I think is a neat character touch because you can hear all the chaos of the city occurring outside. And he plays a metronome to help him sleep. But it's like a way of saying that Detective Somerset is very rigorous about trying to impose like a fake facade of order over things he can't control, right? So he plays the metronome because all around him is just chaos. And that's just how he is to try to cope. It's his coping mechanism.
And the city itself is such a living, breathing character in this movie. So that's another way of characterizing like this city sucks.
What city is it?
It's a fictional city. Mm-hmm. In some county, I forget. But
I didn't know that it was a fake
actually,
city.
Yeah, it was actually filmed in L.A.
Oh.
Can't see at all.
LA.
I think to me, it's like it's very analogous to New York City, right? Like there's subways and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say like Philadelphia area.
It seems like a definite New England place, but I Googled it. It said fictional city.
Huh.
And then we get like an actual like opening credits, which you don't get often anymore.
Love.
They're so good.
It was giving.
What was it giving?
It was giving American Horror Story.
Okay.
Meets Trivia Murder Party from Jackbox. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah, that guy.
Welcome to Trivia Murder Party.
Yeah. You've never played Jackbox?
Just because you're a ghost doesn't mean you can't win.
Well, look it up. Because actually, I think the font is the same. I think it's the exact same.
Well, font. I do think David Furniture is the daddy. David Furniture.
I love David Furniture.
I shop there all
David
the time.
David Fletcher.
I think David Fincher is the daddy of a lot of that aesthetic, you know? And it all started with Seven here.
But I loved it. Is that where the Nine Inch Nails song comes in?
Yes. And during the credits is where you get, it's a bastardized version of Head Like a Hole. But at the end, like, there's no lyrics at all until, like, the credits fade and the movie picks up and you get one line or something at the end. But yeah, it's the Nine Inch Nails song. And then we go to, I assume that was Sunday and this is Monday.
Yeah.
Because I only caught, like, Monday. Five of the day transitions. But it's Monday.
I got them all, baby.
My dude.
I got them all.
So wait, Monday is technically day number two?
Correct.
Okay.
So Mills and Tracy, again, pre-Goop, they just moved in. There's like a Serpico reference, which I appreciated. And then he brings Somerset a coffee. There's another murder. Somerset.
He does have eye crusties though.
He does.
Do you do that with your significant other? You're like, ooh, let me get them crusties. Num, num, num.
I do that with my cat. Who is my significant other.
Yeah, so
other.
Same. He brings Somerset a coffee, which he declines. He's very standoffish to Mills, right? And the vibe is like, I've been up for 3 hours already, you child. I've already had coffee. And I went to the gym. I jerked off twice and read the newspaper.
You better get used to this weather.
I've had sex and I'm about to eat nachos.
Nachos.
Fuck.
So then they go in.
I did like the nice touch where, so they're being led into the crime scene by another officer and Mills kind of takes umbrage with the fact that he's like, did you guys check for a pulse on the dead guy? And they're like,
could have been his bicep.
Could have been his bicep.
Found that out.
Could have been the groin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's an artery there.
Yeah.
Found that out.
But yeah, the police officer's like, the dude's dead, my guy. And Mills is like, why aren't you making sure he's dead? Like, I'm tired of Barney.
Oh, that's how you do it around here.
He's being real shitty about it. Like, I just don't want Barney Fife getting somebody killed, you know?
He's swinging his appendage.
But I do like the added touch where, like, they have this, like, dick measuring contest with this officer. And then when they go into the crime scene, he gives his coffee to that guy. Yeah. Like, I'm just playing.
Yeah.
I'm just playing the game.
What was like Somerset's coffee, I think, that he didn't want?
He set Somerset's coffee down in the rain before.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So he set I assume it was Somerset's coffee down on the ground before they started walking. And then he handed his coffee to the officer.
You're right.
Unless it was
he drugged it.
He like spit in it. He's like, here you go.
The baby.
Yeah. So Spaghetti Man's in there. He's a very large man.
Is this Brendan Fraser from The Whale?
It is. Oh. It is. Hands and feet are tied. So at
or
first
fat
like,
bastard from Austin Powers.
Yes.
Get in my belly.
I want my baby back ribs.
Because mm-hmm. Mills is like, how do we know he's even dead? He's like, I'm sure it could have been a coronary, right? And then they see that his hands and feet have been bound, I think in like barbed wire even.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Grisly,
yeah.
And then Somerset dismisses Mills after a while. There's a whole hullabaloo where they're looking for clues and stuff. But Mills keeps making jokes and telling stories from his old beat that he was on. Looks in the puke bucket and he's like, was there blood in it? He's like, I don't know. You fucking look, man. And then he's like, get out.
Will you go out Fuck and off. Question the neighbors with the policeman?
Yeah. Which is his way of dismissing him, right?
Yeah.
And then the doctor says, yeah, he's dead. And
he did.
We get dead guy dick.
Thank you, doctor.
Let me see that dick.
There's a dick?
Yeah.
I missed it.
So when they go to talk to the coroner, there's the wide shot of the body on the table and you just see his dick. Oh. In fact, actor that plays the spaghetti guy, I think his name is Leland Orser. Or no, that's a
Bob
different
Mack.
Scene. Bob Mack. So Bob Mack, I guess, had such a hard, terrible time filming that scene because he's like, you know, he's crumpled over. He's in I think he's in a suit as well. But also they like poured real cockroaches all over him. And he had to like keep his eyes and mouth shut. Like apparently he taped his mouth shut so the cockroaches wouldn't like crawl in there. But apparently they were like crawling down his underwear and stuff.
Oh.
And it was such a traumatic, like awful thing for this poor actor to go through that David Fincher's way of making it good was the dummy body that they use in the corner. Fincher specifically requested, like, can you give him a huge dick?
There you go, buddy.
Like I need.
That's like the definition of a male brain, like working yeah, right there.
100% is like I need to make good on this guy. Having
Sorry
a bad
for traumatizing
day
you. Let me give you a giant penis, fictional penis.
Fair.
In this scene.
All better.
But yeah, hey, you guys
better.
Know
all my boys are gonna think I'm like that.
You guys know I need to see that dick. Let me see that dick.
What's like? I saw Pete Davidson's stand up one time.
Speaking of big dick energy,
yes.
I thought you were going to say, I saw Pete Davidson's dick.
I wish. Like, oh. I haven't seen it.
Oh, we could all be so lucky.
But rumor is that it's huge, right? That rumor started from Ariana Grande.
Mm-hmm.
His stand-up special? Is that what you're talking
you've
about?
Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So you all know the story. She dumped him and said, well, he does have a huge dick, though. And he's telling the story in a humble way where he's saying, look, I know you guys all hear that I have a huge dick. That was her brilliant plot to set me up for failure with all other women, because they're going to be expecting this huge dick now. And then when they see that I don't have it, they're going to be disappointed. So she's a genius.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that if Fincher was really thinking about it, you don't want to set that guy up for failure.
That's true.
You know, ladies are going to be watching this movie.
But I also think Fincher's.
Dang, Bob, what's up?
Damn, want to
go
man.
Get some spaghetti?
I think Fincher's misreading the female mind. Up? I don't know if any women are looking at the dead guy on the corner table going, like, oh, okay.
Oh, shoot. I think
I hope he was just kidding and didn't think he was that traumatized. Because that's even my male brain is like, oh, Jesus.
Hey, if I ever do a shoot for us, or Madison or Kit, if I do a shoot for you guys and it's a rough day, mm-hmm. promise me that if there's a prosthetic body of me later on in the film, you give me a tiny one.
Okay.
Very we'll tiny. Do.
A real itty bitty one.
With we'll tiny your real hands. One.
Yeah.
We'll just have it molded.
Yeah. Just use what God gave me. Bring out the magnifying glass.
And then Mills talks shit in the car. Like, you've seen my files, right? You've seen what I've done? And, no, I haven't. Actually, I have no idea who you are.
I don't like to read.
Get out of my car. And Mills is like, don't jerk me off, man. That's all I ask, which is the opposite of what I request at every new job.
Just jerk me off, man. That's all I ask.
And we have to pay me.
What, human resources?
Yeah. Oh. So this is where they go to the coroner, and essentially he ate till he burst, like virtually, right? Like, so we're learning that whoever killed this guy tied him up and fed him for 12 hours.
Isn't there like a bruise of a gun muzzle on the back of his head? Yes,
forced him to eat spaghetti and then ended up kicking him when he like passed out from exhaustion from this. And then that's when he burst and died.
Yeah.
He ruptured and died. That's crazy. And that's what's awful. So, if you are old enough to like, because again, I watched this a lot as a kid, but if you're like psychologically put yourself in the mindset of each of these scenarios, they're all so extra fucked up.
Yeah.
It starts to make you nauseated and dizzy. And they're all the most horrifying ways to go out possible. Like that one guy lays on the bed for a year.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, we'll get there.
Yeah. And again, the movie, I think one of the biggest assets the movie has is that restraint of you only see the aftermath of what you don't actually see the act happening.
Yeah. It's like letting your brain fill in the gaps of the torture and the.
And they're all very creative scenarios. You brought up Saul earlier, but mm-hmm. like, I feel like there's no, I bet you $1 million. This was a huge influence on the creators of Saul.
I'm wondering when Saw the first one came out.
It's 2004, right?
I'm looking it up. Yeah, 2004. Good job. Look at yes. you.
Nerd stuff.
Well, and
the short film.
I'm even trying to think of like a Saw equivalent that would have been out at the time or yeah, I guess it really doesn't matter. But
maybe like Cube or something earlier on.
Oh, Cube. Okay.
Maybe.
It was kind of some traps and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, which is kind of why I give, you know, kudos to the writer because I would like to read the screenplay of this just to kind of see, okay, how much detail was actually put in the screenplay and how much of it was the production designer, you know, really leaning into it. And like how, just those conversations, because again, it is a pretty gruesome, all of these murders are gruesome. Mm-hmm. And then to also have the detail of, you know, adding in the deadly sin and like the Catholicism elements of it. So I'm just curious, like looking at this scene in particular, just like how much is the production design playing into it too? So
yeah, a ton.
Yeah.
A ton, I would bet. So yeah, I mean, basically at this point, Detective Somerset, Morgan Freeman's character, he's convinced this is beginning, you know, and everybody else is like, nah, they just killed the big guy. It was a weird mafia style.
God damn it, Somerset, I can't wait till you fucking retire. Oh, I hate your guts.
I just love how he's so chill.
It was a spaghetti execution.
He's like, I know I'm right and you're wrong.
Yeah.
And it's the guy from fucking, Metal Jacket.
Arlie Ermey.
Yeah.
The captain. That blew my goddamn
I didn't know they stack shit this high. Not Alan Arkin.
Recruit, you look like you could suck a golf ball through a garden hose.
I'm going to call you Private Powell.
Private Powell, yeah. Yeah, it's, seeing Lee, Arlie Ermey as the captain was a real fun treat.
There's
for
a
me.
Couple huge, like, character actor cameos in this. And that's the first of them. But yeah, he wants to be reassigned. He's about to retire and you gave me this huge serial killer case. He's like, he knows as soon as he sees it. And they're like, nah, don't be silly.
I just planned on coasting this last week.
Yeah. You know how it is when it's like almost Thanksgiving and you're not going to do anything at the office that week.
Have you ever heard of quiet quitting?
And it's Tuesday, and now there's a press conference because another high-profile murder has taken place, this time like a famous defense lawyer, Eli Gould. Greed is written on the floor in blood. Detective Mills is heading this case. Somerset's off doing something else. He's done quiet quit.
I love the DA in the scene, I think his name is Milford, Mr. Talbot, because he's like, all right, press, I'm not going to answer questions only in the 10-minute time. I will not discuss details. Don't even bother me asking detail. And he like lists this like long, it was just kind of a weird, funny thing where he's like, I will not look you in the eye when I talk. Mm-hmm. I will not stand up straight. I'm going to do it this way. Also, if you're wondering, yes, I will keep the fake mustache on. Like, it's just these really long lists of demands.
The reporters are like, well, what can I ask you?
Yeah. I mean, he's been through this before. He's seasoned. He's not going to put up with it. He's going to brook no nonsense. Yep. I respect that.
And I like how he says, as Brad Pitt, Mills is watching, we have the best people on the case. Yeah, you know, Brad's this like, is the no perfect pressure. Example of what swift justice is going to be. And Brad Pitt's like,
I have no clues. Fuck. No leads.
Shit.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. And that's like all the pressure that's being put on him in that moment is the point of that scene. And it works really well. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Somerset's name is being scratched off the door while he's hunting and pecking on a typewriter, which is the most frustrating thing to watch, right? I don't know about you guys. Millennials had typing class. So whenever I see that, I'm like, fuck.
So did early.
It's a QWERTY, man.
So did elder Gen Zers.
You a typer?
I had a typing class.
Somerset needed some Mavis Beacon for sure.
Yes. I've got very few skills, but I can type like the wind.
Same,
baby.
We also learned cursive.
Why? Why did we learn cursive?
I don't know how to do Zs.
I don't know how to run a bank account, but I know how to do woo with my letters.
Exactly.
Because it looks cool, man. But yeah, the captain's trying to convince him to stay. Like, and he's such a dick. You literally have nothing else, Somerset. This is all you ain't got no woman. You ain't got no kids. You ain't no friends.
Hell, you ain't even got a dog. Yeah.
Really, nobody likes you even here, but definitely not out there. Like, dude, landing on a thick dude just wants to retire. Back up, but he's a valuable detective. He's very good at it, right? Mm-hmm. But he says the big man was fed bits in his food. Here it is, right? So he gives him those. He goes back to the crime scene. The bits appear to be like pieces of linoleum from the floor that were scratched up by moving the fridge. And he pieces that together very quickly. And behind the fridge is written gluttony. And there's a little note.
Gluttony in Greece.
In Greece, yeah. He's always very thematic with mm-hmm. what he uses to even write the words. Mm-hmm. And the quote is from a Milton Paradise Lost quote. I didn't write it down, but it's some poetry
some
shit.
Smart shit.
Some smart shit.
Some F-slur poetry shit, as Mills would say.
This serial killer, we got ourselves a learned man.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I'm all over it, is what Mills says. Because, you know, he's like, I told you I didn't want to do this. This is the first one. It says gluttony. There's greed. There's two. There's going to be five more deaths. I don't want it. And he walks out and Mills is like, I'm all over it.
I love when R. Lee Ermey is sitting on the desk and the phone just rings.
He's like, this ain't even my desk.
He picks up the phone. This ain't even my desk.
I did like that. Yeah. I also wrote slay Brad Pitt's outfit. I forget exactly what he's wearing, but he does like a moment where it's just, you know, 90s fashion, but they're just mix matching the tie with the blazer. It's like very eyesore-ish, but like also kind
in
of
a cool way.
In a cool way.
Also, yeah. If you're Brad Pitt.
Yeah, you make anything look cooler.
You got to watch Fight Club.
Brad Pitt did his own costuming in this movie specifically because he wanted Mills to have poor fashion sense. So it's funny
Good call out, Madison.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah,
good call.
Madison
out.
Has that eye.
Because
he's a young guy, doesn't have the tie. He's struggling at one point, right?
There's one point where he's wearing like a basketball hoop tie. And I'm like, okay, that's a choice. That's a choice.
Oh, like there's like nets and rims?
Yeah, it's like
that's absolutely basketball. A tie you would see in the 90s, though. I vividly remember seeing that
Chicago
shit.
Bulls Nation?
Yeah, yeah, now I see it on hangers in Goodwill.
Yeah, you do.
But after this, Somerset goes to the library. And one of my favorite scenes, I remember watching this so much as a kid. And there's
this
actor. It's the guy from Speed. What's his name? Hawthorne James. He was in a lot of 90s movies. He's still working today, apparently. But he's one of the security guards at the top. Like, how's this for culture? You know, because he's like, you've got the entire world's knowledge at your fingertips and you're up there playing poker.
He said, we got culture coming out the ass.
Yeah. Out the ass.
I laugh so hard because when he's like, yo, man, we got culture. How's this for culture? And he like just puts on like box fifth. I really thought he was going to start blasting like Cult of Personality or something.
I would have loved that.
That would have been cool.
I love that song.
But I like that this is such great characterization for so many people involved, because Somerset has this deal with these security guards that I can come here in the middle of the night, read all night, and you, I'm not going to ask what you're doing. You leave me alone. Since I'm a cop, it's all good, right?
Don't they call him Smiley?
And the way that it's played out, you know that he's done this many, many, many times. He spent tons of time just reading at the library late throughout the night. And that's wonderful. It tells you everything you need to know about Detective Somerset. But also, like, I love that this movie takes place before the internet took over, because it would be so much different. He wouldn't have this wonderful scene where he's reading and photocopying all these books. He would just send Mills a link. You know what I mean?
He would just be on his phone in bed, just like, save to photos. Yeah.
Bloop. Right. He's just texting Mills. Like, the scene doesn't work with technology.
Let me airdrop this to my printer.
Which is why I love Fincher's movie The Killer so much, because a huge part of it is that he uses technology a lot in the movie. It's about an assassin. And most of the time, assassins' stories don't work anymore if you set them in present day, because they just be caught immediately. But in The Killer, the assassin uses a WeWork space to shoot out of, and he stops at McDonald's. He Amazon Primes like fob copiers to break into buildings with, and then pick, you know what I mean? Like, he uses technology of the day. He pretends to be a Postmates guy at one point, and it's all very much on purpose. So it's Fincher's way of doing the same thing he does in Fight Club, which is like mock product placement, but also you have an assassin use modern day technology and embrace it to tell that kind of story. But that's, I love cool. that about Seven, like, that it's like right at the cusp of having too much technology to even tell this story in an interesting way. Cause
it, isn't it amazing just how much different, like, society has grown in such a short amount of time, like with the internet and stuff like that, that it completely changed.
Like, when they get the FBI printouts, I saw like the perforated edges of the paper with like the holes in it. And I was like, fuck.
They all had those printers that were like,
remember you had to print stuff out and you had to rip the shit off both sides before it would be like a piece of paper.
Yep.
Yeah.
God damn. Yeah. Give me chills. I don't want to go back. You know what I mean?
No, you definitely don't want to.
I'd rather be in like,
there's a part,
the 40s than the 80s again.
You know we're old, because I literally,
I don't know why,
I popped. Like, I audibly like got out of my seat. I came. I got the meat sweats. No, but I audibly like did the Leo meme when Somerset pulls out his fucking pager. Beeper!
I never had a beeper.
My mama had a beeper. And I would call her when I'm like, I want to leave the pool.
Beep, beep, beep.
Yep. Gotta go get
sleep. Never had those. But I do remember the paper with the sides on it, and then...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, I feel like I had some of the same tech.
Have you ever been to a library?
Have I ever been to a library? Did you just ask me that? Yes.
What's a library?
I love that he says you've got the entire world's knowledge all around you. And that's what people say about the internet now. It's like, why are you just watching porn and old Workaholics episodes when you got, you know. And that same was true.
Society is going to hell when people are watching old episodes of Workaholics.
That's all I could think of on the fly.
I love it.
Other than porn. This episode was brought to you by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, you know what's good for you, but your brain gets in the way and you just can't quite pull it off. Like when you're trying to fall asleep at night, you know, you got to get up at 7 a.m. You got to work. You want to go to the gym before work. But at 3 a.m., you're just thinking about hippopotamuses, hippopotami. I don't know how to pluralize it. It doesn't matter. You get the idea. So sometimes your brain's getting in its own way. You know what you should do, what's good for you, but you just can't do it. Therapy helps you figure out what's holding you back so you can work for yourself instead of against yourself. You can help find the blocks in your life that are getting in your way, and BetterHelp can get you there. It can match you up with a licensed therapist to help meet your needs. If you don't like your therapist, you can switch free of charge at any time. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/streamingthings.
Gobble, gobble, stream fiends. It is the month of November, and thus comes Thanksgiving if you celebrate it here in the States. But it's a month where we want to take a step back and just really appreciate and be thankful for everything that we have here at Streaming Things. One of the many things that we are thankful for are our patrons at all tiers, but especially our super patrons, which we shout out each and every month here on the podcast. Let's get to it. We are thankful for you, Sydney B, Becky the Farmer, Kaylee Sampson, Stanton Valentino, Anthony Corona, Infamous, Brenstradamus, it's a great name, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Optimus, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento7, Jace Gramo, AK Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Big Bud Horny got an upgrade, Conrad, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Jose Ruben Cruz Rodriguez, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Emmy, Joe Velez, Valerie, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Love Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Lauren Waller, Jadinklage Morgoon, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Jeanette Murphy, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. And with that, let's get back to the show. Gobble, gobble.
So yeah, he gets copies of the Divine Comedy, the Canterbury Tales, anything that has mention of the Seven Deadly Sins, and sends it to Mills in an envelope after photocopying it. Wednesday, it's Mills frustrated getting Cliff's Notes copies of these books delivered to him, which I thought was hilarious. I forgot about Cliff's Notes. He ends up hiding them in his desk because he's taking over Somerset's office.
That was quick. And what? Also, Somerset is just like in there.
Yeah, he's like, I'm still here.
Yeah. I'm still here. Well, also, shout out.
You can have my chair. Fuck me.
Also, shout out lefties. Morgan Freeman is a left-handed person.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I didn't notice. Was he writing with his left?
Yeah. And then later he threw darts with his left hand.
My brain is stuck in the 90s so hard that you said, shout out lefty. And I thought you said left eye from TLC and was like,
I can see the confusion.
I was like, I'm more of a T-Boz and chili guy myself, right, but I'm with you. Where are we going with this? I'm so dumb. It is miraculous. I get anything done.
Well, I may have mentioned this before, but so I am a left-handed person. So anytime I see left-handed actors, I have a notes tab on my phone where I
really,
yeah,
retabulate all the ones that you found.
Mm-hmm. My people.
But Morgan Freeman, I clocked him before. I knew that he was left-handed, but it's just fun.
He's already on the list.
Yeah, he's already.
I clocked
on the list.
Him before.
I clocked him before.
What else we got on there? Do you watch the movie Southpaw a lot? Jake Gyllenhaal.
Do you really? Do you, it's kind of a long list. Do you want me to
just name a few of your favorite lefties?
So, RBG.
Okay.
RBG.
Notorious,
J-Law. Yeah.
Okay.
Seth Rogen.
Nice.
Caleb McLaughlin from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Gatton Matarazzo.
Two lefties in NST?
Yeah. Henry Thomas from E.T.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And all the...
trying to think of who else.
Mac Flanagan shows. Yeah.
Sophie Nalisse from Yellow Jackets. Mm-hmm. So is Courtney Eden from Yellow Jackets. Lisa Kudrow. Prince William.
Lisa Kudrow is my ideal. Like, that's the quintessential lefty, I think. Don't you think? Like, smelly cat.
Smelly cat.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of shit that they're up to, these lefties.
These lefties.
George Michael. Mark Hamill is also left-handed.
I feel like every time we say the word lefty, I think there's some right-wing troll out there that's getting like, what?
What?
Lisa Kudrow, no.
No. I love smelly cat.
But no, that's just a very niche thing that I look for.
I love
when
that.
People write.
But so, Tracy calls and
yeah.
wants to speak to Somerset and invite him to dinner. And if you think I didn't clock that, Mills calls Tracy Dingleberry as a term of endearment. Uh-huh. You would be wrong.
I told you not to call me at work, Dingleberry.
I was like, why did you just call her Dingleberry?
That was my nickname in high school.
Really?
No.
I like their couple dynamic. I really do. I think they're very, and probably because they have real chemistry, right? But I mean, it works. Mm-hmm. And also the fact that she's so sweet to Detective Somerset, even though they're not getting along. It endears you to these three people very quickly.
Yeah.
This dinner scene's great. The big laughter scene over the vibrating
she's,
home.
She's the glue.
It's hard.
Yeah. She's like you said, she's the heart goop. And soul. She's the goop of this movie. She's the goop of this movie.
Because
if it wasn't for her, these two probably wouldn't end up being like.
Yeah. They become besties quickly because of her.
Yeah. yeah. Maybe they're not besties, but they're definitely guys who like really respect one another.
It is literally Somerset's only friend.
Yeah.
Which I was trying to figure out, is she inviting him over? I mean, I think it's for both reasons that I'm about to say. I think, you know, she sees that her husband is like struggling like with this person. So she's sure. like, let's break the ice. He's gone home and talked shit. Yeah. Let's break the ice and invite him over for dinner. You know, I think this will help you. You guys can like be in an environment that's not quote unquote work. But then another part of me is like, or does she invite this man over because, you know, I guess she hadn't met him previously. Like what I was getting at is like
she's looking for friendship.
Yeah, looking for
herself.
Yeah. So
she's bored.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
She's like, let me just stir the pot.
But she's also
bit.
Like later on she talks about how she's struggling living in the city and this guy's close to retiring. She probably just wants to pick his brain, like, hey, is it always this shitty? Does it always rain? Like, is it literally
it has not stopped raining every fucking day? Since we've moved in.
Yeah.
Which like was 6 months ago.
Seems like an above average amount of murders as well.
Yeah. I was reading some stuff with David Fincher and someone asked him like, why is it always raining in the movie? And he was like, well, it adds to the, you know, it makes it more claustrophobic and it kind of lends to the spirit of like the uneasiness of living here. But also we didn't have to worry about the weather anytime we shot outside. It's like, oh yeah, that's true. You know, it's going to rain.
Yeah. Just make it rain, baby. Not in the cool music video way. and this is where they go to the, you know, they end up going over the lawyer case at night after the dinner, which seems rude. Just send her to bed and start looking at pictures of dead people, you know.
She might have wanted in on that action.
Somerset realizes the wife is who you have to see. Maybe it's not something she's seen, but something she needs to see. Because the picture of the wife with her eyes circled.
Yeah, he had circled her eyes in blood.
And Mills had put her in a safe house. So they go to talk to her, force her to look at pictures of her dead husband.
Which
has got to suck. Yeah. And Somerset's, I love how the dynamic of this scene is like, because he's retiring. So Mills is in the forefront. He's like, I know, I'm sorry. I just need you to look at it. Okay, okay. And then Somerset like comes up. It's got to be now. I'm telling you. And then he like backs away like, I'm not going to tell her, but because this is your thing, but you need to stay on the gas there. I just loved that because he's totally committed to that. Like, I'm trying to help you, bud. This is not my shit. Mm-hmm. Which is very cool. But anyway, she does the paintings upside down. So they go back to that crime scene. They eventually find fingerprints.
When they do take the painting down, Brad Pitt's like, he's fucking us. And then he goes to the table, like, this is what he's doing to us.
That's what I mean about like as an adult, this guy kind of sucks. He's definitely
he's so funny.
No offense to anybody. I don't mean it this way. It's just a conglomeration of all these things. But like he's definitely in like four fantasy football leagues. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, no.
He stopped drinking Bud Light recently.
for a very specific reason.
An IPA. Yeah. He's shifting over to IPAs.
It's what Mills is giving right now. do I fit in?
Yeah, you're doing it. It's
like a crab thing.
Yeah.
Tell me.
This is why I like Totally Killer so much.
I get it.
Yeah.
I would have had such a blast with that movie in a theater, but I watched it by myself and just got a few chuckles. So nice. That's how I feel about it. Totally Killer. But anyway. So then they find it spells help me. The fingerprints on the wall spell help me.
Help me.
In a scary way. Scary, scary way.
Can you just imagine him with like.
That's a severed hand.
And they're not the victims, which is so weird. Like it's not the lawyer guy's prints.
Yeah.
So they go to this guy's house thinking that it's the killer, but Somerset and Mills are not convinced that this guy that they've come up with is a killer.
Victor.
Victor. Yeah. He's got a long rap sheet of mental illness and heinous crimes.
Can I just say the SWAT guys? So they're going after this sex pest.
They love this.
These SWAT guys need to fucking tone it down.
Yeah, Victor goes by Victor, but his real name's Theodore Allen. Doesn't really seem like our guy. But before this, we get like a little conversation about Somerset's cynical view of the world. We'll get more on that later. And then there's this conversation in the car on the way to the crime scene.
Mills, like, he's actually shot a guy before. And there's this thing where he's like, I can't remember the guy's name.
Well, the cop that got shot.
He can't remember the cop's name.
He can't remember his
name. Which I thought that was going to come up again later, and it doesn't.
I was trying to think, what is the point of this scene? And I guess it's just supposed to show that, like, even these tragedies that stick out in our memory, like, it's just another one. It's like, it's not a positive thing. It's a very cynical thing that's happening that we see in this car.
But I think this movie is
relentlessly cynical.
Because I think it's so Mills and Somerset are two opposing views of the world, right? So Mills is still like, I do this thing because I want to help people. But he's also forgetting the name of this person that died in his arms, basically.
Mm-hmm. But I think he's lying. He's like to himself. He's delusional.
But he's also kind of like kicking himself. Like, I can't remember his name. Like, why can't I do that? And Somerset's back there like, I fucking told you.
Yeah.
We all suck.
Because you're a piece of shit. That's what I've been saying.
But I feel like if this scene wasn't included, it wouldn't have taken away from anything.
I agree.
Because my thought was when I was watching it, oh, like him killing somebody is going to have something like that's going to be like an added element to like why, you know, he is this deadly sin or like, you know, whatever. Like I was like, oh, like that's going to tie in at the end. And then
maybe it's just the simple thing of like he's used a gun before, whereas Somerset never has.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why John Doe is, I don't know, kind of targeting him to, I don't know.
Johnny Doe.
He knows he'll shoot. I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't think you need to get that far. I don't think you need to make that. That's a hat on a hat, I think.
Yeah.
When they get there, SWAT before dicks.
Dude, these dudes are like coked out of their fucking mind.
And I love that. Like Somerset looks over at Mills and he's like, they love this. So they start busting down all the doors. There's fucking air fresheners everywhere. They find Victor. He's laying in the bed, both his hands cut off, or at least one of them. And he's
looking
just
like a corpse.
It's wild.
I wrote, Victor is big dead.
Big dead.
And then I wrote, Victor is not dead. Mm-hmm. But I watched this in Starbucks this morning. And
wait, the entire movie?
Not the whole movie. I probably like the second
half. This part though?
Yeah, like starting a little before this. And
is that girl watching Seven?
And the part where Victor like takes a breath, like I jumped like in the Starbucks and the person that was sitting a couple seats next to me, like I could see them like looking at me.
The sloth scene.
Yeah, I just was like.
See, when you text that, I pictured you watching this on your phone.
Like in line at Starbucks. No.
Just ordering your drink. And I was like, so like, damn. But like sitting quietly for a long time watching it. Way different.
I was like watching and then taking notes. No one could see what I was watching.
So I got
Fuck them.
I got a big laugh out of. So they kick the door open and there's just a body under a sheet. And they're like, get the fuck out of the bed, dirtbag.
Well, I guess they couldn't see very well. And it just looks like he was seeping. And he had like the morning wood and shit. He's pitching a tent.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But at one point they're like still aiming the gun at like Brad Pitt and stuff. Like, dude, calm down. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Relax, SWAT guys.
You got what you deserve.
Oh my gosh.
Well, he has a horrible record. You guys know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I just made the connection. Were all of those car fresheners there to like hide the scent of the dead body?
Yeah. Of him decomposing. Okay. Yeah. Not the dead body, but the fact that he's like,
I just thought it was like a choice.
Rotting bed sores and hasn't showered in a year.
I just thought it was an interior design choice.
No. That's because he did that for a year. And that's what we find out in a bit. And that's wild to me. Like that guy, he's had him on fluids and stuff so that he wouldn't die. But he's
that's
just
crazy.
He's been in just about as much pain as anybody I could imagine.
Sloth.
Now he's still got hell to look forward to.
What entails with that deadly sin?
He was just lazy. He was a lazy boy. So he's been there a year. It's fucking wild to me.
Damn.
And he's been taking a picture of him and dating them. And so one was 3 days ago, was the last time that he was there. Presumably to cut his hand off to take it to Eli Gould's place. But it was exactly a year ago to the day that he tied him up there and started this process. And you think, oh, maybe they're going to be able to get to question him and stuff now because he is still alive. No, he chewed off his tongue and his brain is completely mush. He still has hell to look forward to. And then Tracy calls. She needs someone to talk to. She calls Detective Somerset.
Oh, but there was that photo guy.
Photo guy?
Yeah.
The photographer. Oh, the
outside of Victor's house is where that happens. You're right.
Yeah, there's like a photographer that tries to take a photo and Mills is like, oh, you
get the fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
And you can tell that it's Kevin Spacey's voice. Like it really is him as an actor, you know? And he's like, I have a right to be here and all that shit.
Pretends I will say when I watched it for the first time, I didn't clock that.
No,
that
me neither.
Him.
Yeah. Definitely not. Definitely not.
I do like how, cause he's like, I got your number. And he's like, oh yeah, it's Mills, M-I-L-L-S. So maybe like that's Mills unwittingly telling him that's who he
His
is.
His pride cometh before the fall.
Yeah. Mm. And so that's how he knows how to find him. And
it's terrible. Mm. Yep. Poor Tracy. Cause I was a huge Shakespeare in Love fan. So I'm not ashamed to admit that it is what it is. And so I actually was really into Gwyneth Paltrow. So this movie hit me hard. I'm not going to lie. You know?
I get it.
No. So they meet up at like a diner and she tells them how much she hates the city, how much she's lonely. Does it ever get any better? Does it ever stop raining? Yes. She meets with Somerset at the diner. And she tells him also that she's pregnant.
This scene is so hard to watch.
It is.
For me.
I cried. I always cry. There's a specific scene where he tells her his own story. So apparently we find out Somerset was with a woman who was pregnant and he almost, I don't want to say made her, but he said, I wore her down. Like he was very insistent that she abort it. And I presume that's why she left him. Mm-hmm. Right. And he says, there's a point where he says, if you decide to get rid of it, just don't tell him. But if you decide to keep it,
Spoil it
every chance you get. And the way Gwyneth Paltrow's face breaks and then collects it, she collects herself is so good. And I was destroyed. I cry every time in that moment. That is the core of the movie for me is that scene right there. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cry right now. It's fucking good. She's good.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, I'm not in a relationship and I'm not pregnant. Thank God. But
that we know of.
That we know of. But just this kind of, this feeling of being lost and like, you know, you're a young person that's trying to figure out, you know, where you fit in the world and like who, you know, trying to like work on your relationship and like, you know, you want them to succeed. You want them to like have their dreams and their aspirations. But then, you know, you're kind of stuck with, you know, when do I matter? And so it's just like, when do I need to step up? And it's just like that scene is kind of for me what that embodied of like feeling trapped, but also like wanting to be, you know, supportive of your partner. And I don't know, it was really just being a young person in my 20s, just like, that's really, it's hard. And seeking, you know, an older, wiser person to talk with and, you know, and I'm sure, you know, Morgan Freeman is aware of, you know, what she's going through. And I don't know, it's very touching, very sad to watch too.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking because like I know what that's like. And he even says like he doesn't regret not having the child, but also does every day of his life. Like he knows his own life will be better, but he still doesn't think he made the right. Again, this movie is so cynical.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bring a child into this nasty, ugly world to experience only pain and nothing but pain until it died. And I still believe that to be true. You know, I'm like, fuck, dude, fuck this movie. Yeah. But I know what, you know, I have kids and, I actually read a fantasy, I don't want to go on a huge tangent here. I don't mean to, at least, but I read a fantasy novel, tons of them as a kid. This one in particular was called the Sword of Truth series. They're not very good books as an adult, but there's a whole society, like a fake society in that book of these people, kind of like natives that don't believe in letting children do whatever they want, literally whatever they want, eat as much candy as they want, run around, roll in mud, literally no rules whatsoever. Until they're like 10. And their whole philosophy is like, life sucks so bad. So we at least let them like party at first, you know, and because there's plenty of time for them to realize life sucks later. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of like remembered that. And I read that when I was like 10, but I've remembered that my entire life and kind of used that in my parenting, like a little bit. Like I don't let them do whatever they want, but like I just shower them with love.
Let them be kids.
And, you know, let them be kids.
Of course.
And I, when Arya's mom's not looking, you know what I mean? I'm like, psst. And I like give her chocolate and stuff. And she's like making her avocados and salad in the kitchen. And I'm like, psst, come here.
And I love you more than mom.
It's not just that. No, not that way, but it's just like,
yeah,
I like to be that.
Spoiling
yeah,
them.
Yeah, it's just like, because life will, there's so much pain I cannot prevent her from experiencing, right? Like, I don't have the particular set of skills. Or I'm not omniscient, right? Like, it's just inevitable, and I know that's coming for her. Mm-hmm. And so I that's what I felt in that moment where when he said, spoil them every chance you get, and then her face breaks, you know.
That, yeah.
There's also something I've never picked up on before, but later during the whole what's in the box scene, Mills still doesn't know, right? Yeah. Like, that's when he finds out. And I wonder if she decided to abort it because she had never told him. And it's been like, what, 4 days or whatever? Not that necessarily that's enough time for her to have made a decision.
I think it's... like,
this is what, like, day... this is Thursday.
I think this is day 5. Because they get breakfast.
Friday?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why I missed
this,
a Friday.
This is Friday, yeah.
And then she dies on what, Sunday?
Saturday.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why do I have a Sunday tab? Killer calls in his own murder, pride, and all that stuff is on Sunday for me. Whatever. So I guess, yeah, there's only like a day before that happens.
Wow.
Never mind. Bummer, dude.
Bummer.
So they have that whole conversation. Eventually he gets called away, and she thanks him for all the for talking to me and stuff. And then my next note is really funny. I'm sorry, switching gears entirely. It's Mills is upset about how this guy's obviously crazy, right? And Somerset's like, we can't pigeonhole him like that. And he's like, nah, he's definitely in his grandma's panties, rubbing himself in peanut butter. And I remember thinking like, well, it's not kink shame here. That seems like a little, who doesn't among us like to rub themselves in peanut butter every now and then?
Yeah, he does a couple like serial killer references. Like I think the talking to his grandmother, that's a psycho reference, right?
Oh, probably. Mm. I didn't even clock that.
Talking to the dog made me do it. That's a Summer of Sam reference.
Yeah.
And then the Jodie Foster thing is that guy who tried to assassinate, was it Richard Nixon?
Oh, yeah. And he really did. He was obsessed with Jodie Foster.
Yeah, he was doing it to try to impress Jodie Foster. Yeah.
Holy shit, dude. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch any of those references.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, the Summer of Sam murderer said that his neighbor was possessed by the devil and told him to kill all the people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Huh. Interesting.
But anybody with peanut butter? Any peanut butter worked in anywhere?
I'm sure with the dog.
Why am I just picturing a peanut butter baby? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Peanut butter baby, what?
Oh, man. There's like a baby that smothers his body with peanut butter, and he like slaps his stomach and it like makes a noise and he just goes, ah. Just look it up.
It sounds terrifying.
Just look up peanut butter baby.
No, not doing it.
Well, I'm doing it for you.
No. I don't want to see it.
I want to see it.
Oh, yeah, there's the meme.
Oh, yeah. That is horrifying. It kind of looks like what I imagine Sloth and the Goonies look like as a baby.
Friend.
Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth.
At this point, they have to hire the FBI guy to give them illegal records of people who have checked out certain books. And it's funny to me that this, because this is pre-Edward Snowden, right? So it's
this
like
is pre-Patriot Act.
The idea of this is like, what? And now watching this now, I was like, oh, they definitely, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Of course they do that.
It's so funny. We lived in, it was such a better time.
We were so naive.
And they basically keep records of everybody checking out certain books. Yeah, like Mein Kampf makes sense, right? But also even apparently Seven Deadly Sins and stuff like that. So they have a list of this. And on that list, they find...
Jonathan Doe.
Jonathan Doe has checked out all of the requisite books. They go to his apartment. There's a bondage joke, which I appreciate. By the way, while they're reading the book lists, something about the bondage of self, I think. And then Mills is like, bondage? And because he's dumb as shit. And Somerset's like, no, not that. And he's like, nah. it's a tiny thing, but I was like, yes.
Yeah. I wish.
so they knock on the guy's door, and then he appears to come back. He's got like a fucking baguette and shit, like old school into the downtown grocery store kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he shoots at them and runs away. There's a, you said it got nominated for best editing. This chase scene.
Crazy.
Is so long.
Yeah.
It is interminable. I couldn't decide if I loved it or if they should have cut about a minute and a half out
of it. This was the one bit of the movie that I was like, click, 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 click. Like I was fast forwarding through it because I was like, well, I was running out of time.
I get it.
And I was like,
It's kind of wild how long this chase is. What about you, Steve? Did you think about that?
It does. I think it does go on way too long.
Like they could have cut huge sections of like the tenets or like,
or maybe,
quiet down out there. Like these are gunshots, guy.
I feel like Mills fell so many times. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Too much. I did like the end shot where right before he puts the gun to the head, it was like his reflection in the
water.
Oh,
that's great.
That was a beautiful shot.
I mean, everything looks great. Like it's a beautiful looking movie, but yeah, I think they could have trimmed this down. I do like the approach they took with the scene. Cause I guess David Fincher is like, he says he hates chase movies where whoever's being chased or the chaser knows where the chasee is going. So they just cut them off or take a shortcut. Like, I'm here. Mm-hmm. So, and he didn't feel that was realistic. And then Brad Pitt was the one with like, well, why don't I like pretend like I don't know where he is at any moment? Like he can pop out and shoot me at any second. So like, I'm scared.
That's scary.
Cause, and I think they effectively do that. Cause if you watch him, he's like walking as if he has like cement tied to his shoes. He's like really kind of like, is he over there?
He's very peaky and herky-jerky.
It adds to the tension, I think, really, really well. But I think they could have like gotten out of the apartment building quicker. So you didn't see the kids playing video games. Like he went in the window, mm-hmm. like that kind of stuff.
I love how those kids just went right back to watching TV too.
Yeah, they're like, that's weird.
When Brad Pitt stormed
in, they were like, this happens all the time in this city.
Another one?
Oh yeah, that guy went that way. Sorry, man.
And then the other kid's like, this is the third time someone's been chased with a gun this week.
John's always trying to get us to read his tiny handwriting and he went out the window.
But apparently Brad Pitt actually like fell through a windshield, like legit like tripped and fell through a car windshield doing this chase scene and like fucked up his arm.
Oh, the part where he had to run across the cars on the street.
And he like really messed up his arm and he needed like some type of surgery for it.
Is that why his arm's in like a sling and stuff?
Yes. And so the good thing is like after, his arm's in a sling after the fact, legit because he just fucked up his arm in real life. But there's actually the scene where they're knocking on the door and the chase starts. They filmed that after he hurt his arm. So if you pay attention to that scene, that arm, he's actually like doing a lot of like hand in pocket, hiding it away from the camera so you don't see that side of him, which I thought was, I didn't notice it until someone like pointed out like, he is doing that.
Definitely did not notice that. But I did notice that, I guess they were saying in the movies universe that he got hurt in one of those falls.
Yeah.
But anyway,
he falls. John Doe gets the jump on him, puts a gun to his head, but he doesn't kill him. He just gets away.
He elects not to kill him. And then Somerset back at the apartment is like, you can't go in there. We're like, there's no way to explain how we picked this apartment. Why are we knocking on this door? We can't tell him how we paid the FBI. And then so Mills is like, yeah, I got you. Kicks the door in. No point in arguing about it now.
You stupid son of a bitch.
So they pay like a junkie or some kind of at least homeless person to say that they called him, which I think is hilarious.
Yeah. I love the way that though. I did like that editing because he kicks down the door. Morgan Freeman's mad, storms off. And he's like, oh, hey, how much money we got left? Like, it's just like he doesn't care.
That's when it hits him, you know? Is to hire the vagrant. So, and then he has tokens of every kill. So I don't think I remember clocking that as a kid, that he's got like law books in there with blood on them. And he's got the spaghetti sauce. And then Victor's hand is in there. And then they look through everything, but this is where they realize that it was the photographer. We had him the whole time. We didn't have him. You didn't know that was the, you know, it's like, it sucks that he was
he's
right there.
He's fucking with us. And then he did that like pose again.
Yeah. Remember? Because again, he's a closeted homosexual. We've clocked that about him.
Very metro.
No prints in the apartment whatsoever. Not a single fingerprint. Somerset's
in
there.
Red cross.
There is.
There's some sex stuff happening in that apartment. Just saying.
Some red room energy.
And Somerset's trying to read the notebooks. He quotes it a few times, but even if we had 50 men 24 hours a day reading these books, it would take 2 years. That's how crazy he pours every thought that he has on this page. And until he calls, I admire you, detective.
Ooh, I just got a spine chill.
Would you fuck me?
Yes.
You ever seen Silence of the Lambs? And he basically, you know, he tells him he admires him and
he has to speed up his schedule now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You fucked it. I'm not going to lie. You fucked my shit up a little bit.
But I can still do it all.
If Mills had caught him, it would have saved his wife.
Well, yeah. That's
so
how
sad.
Time works.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Duh.
That's how chronological order works.
I'm just saying. He got outplayed.
If Mills didn't move their whole family to the city.
I'm not prone to victim blaming. I'm just saying.
Very fair.
It's the victim's fault.
It's a skill issue.
I don't want to blame the victim, but it's the victim's fault.
It's a slight skill issue. That's all I'm saying. Can't go in now. And then Saturday, I guess. I don't fucking know. I still don't believe
time
you guys.
Time to talk.
I don't think I would have wrote Sunday. Snape. I wouldn't have wrote Sunday for no reason. Whatever.
Isn't Saturday the prostitute?
Saturday's when they go to the sex club. And he's like, I thought it was performance art. And we haven't seen the contraption yet. But Somerset's just like, why would you make this for somebody? And he's like, I don't know. People do all kinds of weird shit. And we go to the sex club. And we find the lust murder.
There's a point in the sex club where they're walking through the hallways.
How do we turn this music off?
And then
you can't.
This police officer just kind of like, what are you doing here? And it just seemed like he was a haunted house actor.
Yes. I hated it. I hated that. It was very gimmicky. It's very unlike David Fincher.
It's like, this is who we casted to play this guy.
Yeah.
It's all we have.
This is also where we get the line. I think it's Detective Somerset. I don't remember even in what context. Why does he say this? Is it interviewing the guy who had the strap on? But he says, this isn't going to have a happy ending. I swear to God, Morgan Freeman says that line in this scene. I just don't remember why. But the movie doesn't. A little telegraphing.
Oh, he says it at the bar. Because I had that line written down. It's when he and Mills are at the bar.
Okay.
To each other.
Oh, I think I was thinking of it in the context of like, oh, he's in the room.
Oh, like a happy ending?
And, yeah. No. Like play on words like, oh, funny. It's another Somerset.
I guess this guy's not going to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
It's another scene in the bar where they're arguing about their world perspectives. And this is the big one where Mills is saying like, I don't fuck that. I can't operate my life believing what you believe. I don't even believe that you believe it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then this is where and Somerset says, this isn't going to have a happy ending. And he like looks at the camera and winks. Yeah, but that sex club stuff, I mean, like Steve said earlier, all we see is like the giant, like machete dildo. And we see a little bit of the body, but not really. It's just like the legs and some blood. And you can just put two and two together. And we get the long interview. And this is the, if you like this scene, Mindhunter will be your jam. Mm. It's the entire show is just interviewing people like this.
Nice.
About dark subject matter. But he's all in shock completely. And I think the actor does a great job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does.
He told me, I'm not going to do it.
He's been in a ton of stuff too. I couldn't.
Yeah, that's another
one.
I
couldn't place him. Like, I'm like, I know that guy, but I couldn't place him at all.
I mean, there's Richard Roundtree, Arlie Ermey, we already talked about. Who else?
So many people.
By the way, the writer, Andrew Kevin Walker, plays the dead man at the first crime scene. Like the husband, where he's like, did the kid see it?
Oh.
The body is the writer, Andrew Kevin Walker.
That's a fun little
Easter
egg.
Yeah. Anywho.
But I guess this is Sunday because, after the bar, he goes home.
Yeah, it was nighttime.
Gives Tracy a cuddle. And Somerset can't, he can't sleep. He
breaks his metronome.
He plays darts with a switchblade.
That's what I do when I can't sleep.
I thought that the switchblade thing was going to be like, someone's going to be like, you brought a knife to a gunfight. And
he's like, I also have a gun.
You lose. And he just like switchblades.
You lose.
I won't shoot somebody, but I will stab you. I got a switchblade. I'll throw at you like a knife board.
I'll cut a motherfucker.
Somebody shoot this motherfucker. Do you remember that?
Yeah. So on Sunday, the killer calls. He calls in his own murder. You can tell like on the 911 call that it's his voice. It's the Pride murder. And that one's pretty dastardly as well because he disfigures her face and gives her the ability to save herself knowing that she'll choose death because of her pride. Mm-hmm.
He cut off her nose to spite her face.
Well, somebody says he cut off her nose and he's like, to spite her face. Yep. That's a quote from the Bible, right?
Probably. I don't know.
Either that or from Shakespeare. I mean,
I read it every year, so I should know. But
well, you were bringing it fucking up. That's why I asked.
That's just a common phrase. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, he can't just be saying that like he knows all idioms, like the spider face. Like that would be so lame if it didn't have any broader context.
They start going back to the agency. They're kind of going over what their next steps are. But wouldn't you know it, John Doe is turning himself in. Detective!
Yeah, I like how they're not even paying attention to this guy who's covered in blood, by the way.
Yeah.
And none of the
what
cops.
What a weird taxi ride that must have been. Because they showed them pulling up in the cab. Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of that episode of Black Mirror where the little girl is walking around aimlessly in the city while everybody is glued to the TV. Because have you seen what I'm talking about?
I've seen all episodes of Black Mirror.
One? The pig one.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like, you know, everybody's super hyper focused on something else, but like nobody's taking a moment to like look at what's around them. That's what it reminded me of as a child. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. But he probably paid that cab because he's independently wealthy. Mm-hmm. Probably paid the cab like $1,000.
No questions, please.
And we find out like he cuts off his fingerprints like weekly. That's why there's no prints around his apartment.
Ow.
Howie. And he wants a deal, right? So they arrest him. And Mills is so like, get the fuck down. But it's like, dude, he turned himself in. Like, I understand it's a
put your nose on the ground, motherfucker.
Yeah, like
faster.
Like
faster.
Chill the adrenaline, bro. He's being.
You were fucking us like this, remember?
He does the desk thing again. Remember?
But also, too, like he's been chasing after this guy and, you know, he's finally there to, you know, let himself in. Yeah, he's. Yeah.
He's so excited.
Yeah.
Excited.
And watching it again, I've seen it so many times. I always think, like, at what point did he kill Tracy? Because we get this scene.
Before.
It's obviously before this, but I mean, like, at what point? You know what I mean? Like, because we see, is it Saturday night after the bar that we see him cuddling her, and he's like, "I love you so much." And
I think it's that morning.
Yeah,
because
he's
covered in blood. I only assume it's hers.
They say it's hers.
So there also is he. So right before Kevin Spacey walks in and you know gets submitted or whatever, the receptionist is like, hey, you have a voicemail.
I know, she called.
Yeah, and so, but I'm also like, did she call or is it him? Did he call him and leave a voicemail?
Well, that would fuck up his plan if it was him.
Well, he doesn't hear it.
He wants Mills to like, I know, but he wouldn't risk that Mills would get the message, right? Or is he going to get it later and be
I
like,
I think later.
Did you look in the box?
killed me. I know you did.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Hmm.
So that's what happens, guys. You guys all know the end of this movie. He ends up making a deal with the cops that Somerset and Mills have to take him out what's it called? But it's like Powerline City or something. You know, it's weird, but there's like trailer out there.
Somerset thinks something's up because he's like, he's two murders away from completing his masterpiece. Why would he just turn himself in? Yeah. I don't like the smell of this.
And he's like, well, I got the last two bodies already done. I'm going to go show them to you guys. Don't worry. And the last two sins are, in fact, John Doe himself for envy, for envying the life of Mills and Detective Mills for wrath. But Mills is not the body. I think Tracy is the only death that has nothing wrong. Like she did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only one without sin that we know of. That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Why didn't you kill Mills?
What the hell?
Wrathfulness.
Just kill him.
But that's his like masterpiece. And we get the long, again, I probably would have cut a lot out of the car ride to the.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of like back and forth that it establishes the same idea several times. Like, I think you're crazy. I'm not crazy. You know,
I'm doing the right thing. Society sucks.
I'm doing dope shit.
I'm going to let everyone know about it.
But also I think too, you know, I would say this is probably a quarter of the movie and, you know, we really haven't spent a whole lot of time with Kevin Spacey. So I think that's probably why.
Sure. It's like the big killer reveal.
And you know, Kevin Spacey sucks, but like, he's a good actor. So like, he's doing a great job. So like, you probably want to like, as a director in that time, you're like, oh man, I got gold with this actor. I want to show him off.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a very good actor, but this is before House of Cards. This is before he won the Oscar for American Beauty. This is like right around the time that he did Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm. He was taken off.
Relatively unknown guy. Like, ooh. Making me want to watch the screen when you talk.
I did take two notes before we get into the very last scene here. I laughed really hard because there was no context for what was happening, but there's a scene where
the shaving the chest.
Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt are just shaving
chests.
I
know!
Like, we're just budding. And like, it makes sense as the scene progresses. Like, oh, they're shaving their chest to put the wire on.
But at first, why the fuck is he just shaving his chest?
There's no context. So I thought,
if I shave my nipple off? Would that be crazy? And he's like, yeah, it would be crazy. And then giggle. And I'm like, what is going on?
They're like slapping each other's ass with a towel.
I love this, though.
I just love at first I'm like, is this signifying that they're friends now? They're like, hey, we're just buds, just shaving a chest together.
And Mills is like, remember when the killer had us like this?
Oh, do I? And then if there's ever a SWAT team in a helicopter, they always have to do the same thing. Now, this is a visual instance, and I'm not on camera, but I will allow you guys to react to it.
Oh boy.
Where every time there's a SWAT dude in a helicopter, these things have to happen.
Okay. Yeah. Nodding and pointing.
Pointing, sure. Yeah.
Well, I've never been in a helicopter, but I think it's loud. And you're like, you have to like talk with your hands, right?
It is, but when you talk with your hands, the way these guys are talking with their hands, they're always like making a face like, I'm undulating so hard with my hand, it's hurting me.
Stop undulating.
So they're like, but yeah. So they get down there and he's like, okay, we're in the middle of the field. I'm going to make you guys famous. Plot twist. The two bodies are me. I killed Tracy. I cut her head off, put it in a box. This poor delivery guy is coming down. Somerset goes to figure out like, what is this? Cause they don't know. They think maybe it's someone trying to spring, John Doe, but no, it's just a box. Oh, how weird. And as he's opening it up, John Doe then starts telling Mills like, oh yeah, yeah, I totally killed Tracy. And, it sucks. She was pregnant too. That's sad.
His reaction, that performance, I think is one of my top five performances.
Brad Pitt?
I've ever seen. Yeah.
Just like
his ability
when
to
he's
go,
like about to puke.
Yeah, just like his ability to like change his facial expression and like be so like emotionally damaged, like the anger, the sadness, the realization that she was pregnant, like, oh my gosh, who's going to be a dad? Like there's just so many things and it's, you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, like he's embodying all of this.
When he realizes, because Somerset's telling him, like he wants you to kill him.
Yeah.
When he realizes like, oh fuck, you're right. I mean, if I do this, he wins, but also you killed my wife.
Yeah.
And he starts like getting physically sick and bending over, but then he stands up, points the gun, goes stone faced and then weeps. And, you know, and the transformations that he's going through, like it's physically showing all these different emotions at the same time that he's competing with. And he's just like, and I think Somerset is saddened by the fact that he kills him. Right. But at the same time, he's like,
he gets it.
I would have shot him. Probably. Yeah. Right. I def me Kit. Yes. Boom, boom. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised that they didn't write for him to stop living himself in that. You know what I mean? Like just.
He took his own gun. Yeah.
Because I assume he's not going to be. I don't know the law very well but they I don't know how criminally persecuted he would be by this.
Yeah. They put him in a police car and the captain and Morgan Freeman have that bit like, we'll take care of him. Like, and it's not of like, we'll take good care of him, put him in the brig. It's more of a like, hey, we're going to make sure he's
absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Like, once he goes on trial, like he technically did murder a person, right? But
yeah.
Is the city going to prosecute pretty heavily? No, I doubt it. Highly doubt it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a
I mean, real... it wasn't public though, right? Like could they say that they're well, I guess
yeah, but there's
handcuffed.
there's a ton of witnesses too. Yeah. Like the other officers that are in the helicopter see it. They're like, they fucking shot him.
Yeah.
And you know Somerset's going to peck at that keyboard like, this is what happened. And it's a bummer ending because Tracy, the only like light in this movie, is brutally killed. And again, that restraint, you don't see her head in the box.
Right.
It's just everyone reacting to what's in it. And your imagination's able to see like how dire that situation probably was for her. And it's awful to think about. And yeah, Brad Pitt's in a really awful place. Morgan Freeman's whole worldview is seemingly proven correct. And that how shitty the world is, and
credits.
That's how it. And yeah, we get a nice little Ernest Hemingway quote, and that's the end.
I was distraught, and again, it's probably the 25th time I've seen this movie or something. But like for whatever reason, last night this like really got into me, into my psyche. It was late at night. I should have watched Knives Out second. I know that now.
This was the movie I watched first out of all the things we had to watch this week because I knew like this is kind of a bummer movie from what I understand.
And yeah.
It was a good move. Yeah. But before we go, we're running a little long. There were some questions submitted to us by the Discord about this movie.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
You can be a patron of the Discord by going to patreon.com/streamingthings and signing up at the appropriate tier. First question we have up is actually from someone who's been on the show before. It's from Alex.
What's up, Alex?
Alex asks, how does one phonetically pronounce seven as it is styled in the title? If you don't know, it's spelled S-E, the number seven, E-N. And I really appreciate other Discord member E. Scramo responded to him saying E-7-N is how you pronounce it. Which, how annoying was it to search for this movie? Because you would, I just searched seven
annoying.
And like a bunch of movies named seven that's not this popped up. I'm like, what? Who the fuck? No, why
well,
would anyone want to watch
on
these?
Letterboxd, you have to put the number seven
yeah.
in replacement of the
And it's so dumb because it's obviously like a graphic design choice, not the title, right? Like it's just a V tipped up to look like a seven. But to answer his question, Sisevenenin, I guess. Kind
of, yeah. Sisevenenin.
This is kind of funny. This is written in by John. He writes, my question, what's in the box? And then he goes on, are you guys going to play what's in the box points during the review? That would be fun. We didn't do that, but we are going to use it for box on
for mailbags.
For mailbags, yeah.
It's going to be our new mailbag.
Let's see. Kyrie asks, what's in the box? Was it the friends we made along the way?
It was.
And I think that's pretty much it for seven. We got some for Knives Out, which will be on Patreon as well.
Yes.
Hold on. I want to read some unhinged Letterboxd reviews.
Yes.
one of them says, Kevin Spacey gives Brad Pitt head. No clickbait. Seven's ending scene is by far my favorite unboxing video on YouTube. Do we all understand that? Okay, good.
We invented YouTube. Go on.
Hold on, I'm trying to find.
We invented YouTube.
Someone was like, crew member to David. So David, what are you going to do about the lighting for this scene? David Fincher, no.
Yes.
Someone wrote, so no head? Question mark. And then somebody wrote, did anyone notice that Gwyneth Paltrow looked boxed in every scene she was in?
Do you think it would have been funny if, Morgan Freeman opened the box and said, goop, there it is.
That's all the time we've got for right now. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
My name's Madison.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Ting.
Streaming Ting.
Fuck it.
Happy streaming.
Happy streaming.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.